You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
Culture and Flavor is a new series from Heritage Radio Network that's all about food and culture centered in Black and Indigenous foodways. Hosted by myself, Zella Palmer, right here in New Orleans, Louisiana. I am a writer, professor, filmmaker, culinary historian, mom, cook, and grounded in my benevolent ancestors' legacies. I'm so excited, y'all, to share with you highly vibrational conversations with some well-known and unsung heroes in the culinary world. Friends who have become family from all over the world. Breaking bread is an art, and on Culture and Flavor, we are painting murals.
I'm the child that know all the history of everybody's household. Good, bad, and ugly. I know, because they talk about it now. My cousins and them, girl, you know everything about everybody. I say, I sure do. I need to put this on tape recorder.
Each episode, we'll hear from cultural bearers, chefs, farmers, scholars, barbecue pitmasters, and more. Where there is flavor, there is history.
I'm excited for him, you know, his vision, you know, just as a Black man coming from the 1940s in the South, to see his vision be able to be acknowledged in such a way. And that's huge for me, you know, as a son, to be able to give him that moment.
Join me on Culture and Flavor and all of my guests as we share stories that will have you praise dancing, cooking, conjuring, and inspiring your culinary journey. Subscribe to Culture and Flavor wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Luke Bank.
I am Cha Periwan.
And this is Agave Road Trip, the critically acclaimed award-winning podcast that helps Greek ex-bartenders better understand agave spirits in rural Mexico.
And today we're talking about agriculture, but not any kind of agriculture, right, Señor Lu?
I don't know. It kind of feels like it is any kind. This is my, like, I'm getting all
every
lost
kind.
In terms. Every kind. You sent me a link to a story?
Did I?
I think it was a story. Some kind of non-for-profit or government entity that was using a new term, or at least new to me term, called climate smart agriculture.
Oh, whoa. It's the World
FAO,
Health
Organization. FAO.org. Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations.
Correct. Nothing less, nothing more.
Not FAO Schwartz.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, climate smart, which I thought it was refreshing.
So tell me why. Why did you think that was refreshing?
Yeah, as you know, Lou, we travel quite a bit and we ask third parties all the time, how do you plant your things? Are you familiar with the term of regenerative agriculture? And it's just been really funny to me that every time I throw that term to people in rural Mexico, they look at me if I were swearing or something. Regenerative agriculture seems so alien to them. And the other day, it got to the point where this guy was like, well, I don't know what the hell you mean by that, but it seems like what you're trying to tell me, it's like how to do like correct agriculture, like proper agriculture. I was like, yeah, or smart agriculture. So yeah, like that's why I think like climate smart agriculture is it's something that can better communicate things to people that are not hippies and that are not academics or that are not like completely I don't know, familiar to this.
Huh. Okay, well, I like the concept. My immediate response to it was, oh, good, there's a new term. Like, we're not going to say regenerative agriculture anymore. We're not going to say biodynamic agriculture. Now it's climate smart, and what will it be next? And, you know, I feel kind of like maybe the farmers that you're talking with, in that in that I think we're trying to say something in a couple few words because a couple few words travels farther and faster than a paragraph. But I feel like maybe the rush to say the thing is causing the thing to lose its meaning.
I mean, you could say that about anything from, I mean, for me, one of my, like one of my favorite examples is the notion of gourmet. Like if somebody uses the term gourmet in 2023 to describe something, you immediately get running out of the place, right?
I don't know. I feel like maybe what you are referring to is sort of what I hear now when people use the word authentic.
Oh, I mean, they're the same person, Lou. The person using authentic and gourmet, they are the same kid. It's they also use Latinx to add on top of that.
Or Gringex.
No, Gringex is fine. Latinx is not. But anyway, so I think that terms, notions evolve and they naturally start finding a more effective way to express themselves. I think that instead of, as you're saying, instead of losing meaning, they find ways of being better and more precise. And that's why I love about climate smart agriculture, because in three words, like, it's very self-explanatory.
Oh, okay, explain it.
Well, it's agriculture that is not affecting the climate in adverse ways or forms.
Oh, wow. That is so interesting. I honestly, that is not at all how I took it.
Well, and that it's also using the climate to its advantage, I guess, but that it's that has a happy relationship with the climate.
Huh. See, when I hear climate smart agriculture, I think, oh, I'm planting stuff that can survive in this particular climate, which, you know, like, okay, so I'm only planting agave. That's what I hear it.
Yeah, but you're a special kind, Blue. No. I think that, I mean, and again, like I'm talking about evolution of terms, and I believe regenerative agriculture sounds extremely obscure.
Huh. When I hear regenerative agriculture, what I hear is, okay, the stuff I plant is meant to bring back the health to the soil that I destroyed when I wasn't doing regenerative agriculture.
Yeah, because you're thinking as someone that has destroyed before planting.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, and I think climate smart also includes the people that have not been destroying while planting. Like regenerative, I think it's very accurate in a lot of the patches of the, like in a lot of areas.
Yeah.
But I think climate smart, what is interesting, it also includes a bunch of the people that have done smart practices throughout their lives or the history of their communities. So maybe those lands do not need to be regenerated. They have always been a healthy state.
Right. Okay. Yeah. No. I like that, which is why these farmers would look at you like, why would I need to regenerate it? It's fine.
It's been fine for the last few hundred years.
So climate smart might make more sense to them. So you're heading there to a community that actually practices what I think you're describing as climate smart agriculture, right?
Where am I heading?
You just told me Jalisco?
To Zapotitlan? Actually, I will say not necessarily. I wouldn't use Zapotitlan and Jalisco as a golden standard of climate smart agriculture by no means. No.
well, not Jalisco as a whole, but that community. You don't think so?
No, I don't think so. No, huh. They are a perfect example of a community that has. I mean, it's amazing that they have kept a lot of their relationship with agave spirits, but they have lost a lot of their other practices. And even, you know, like we couldn't find one adobe house in the whole town.
Oh, and I'm sorry, how do you plant adobe?
Well, what I'm saying is like that's another practice that is linked to...
Yeah.
You know, like I think, for example, just from the top of my mind, I was just in San Luis Atolotitlan, Puebla. Mm-hmm. I think those guys will be closer to a community that is still practicing a lot of that. And also, I was having this conversation with Martina from Colectivo El Masico. Mm-hmm. They have a small restaurant in Seminario 12 in Mexico City. So if you guys ever come to Mexico City, try to make a reservation there. she and her mother are wild, and they don't buy anything at the supermarket. They source everything from milpas. Every ingredient they serve in their restaurant has to come from a milpa system, otherwise they don't buy it. And I was being very stupid, and I told her that I was not even sure if some of the geometries that people claim, or I mean the ways of planting that people relate to milpas, are actually milpas, or they're like new concepts that the hipsters are trying to convince others that it's how you make things. And she was so angry at me, like with all reason. And she's like, I just don't think you have been exposed to enough milpas in your life, Chava. And she's very right. Honestly, I have not been to many of these of these places. That has not been the area that I have researched more carefully, or the towns where I have lived. Yeah. So
if I understand you correctly,
yeah,
you were being sort of dismissive of this thing called milpa that you haven't explained yet. And she was saying, oh, no, this thing that you're dismissing, like they just have a different way of doing it, which you should maybe explain.
No, I said that. I mean, you know, milpa has become a really a huge buzzword in Mexico.
Yeah.
And I think in the U.S. too.
Not so much.
And milpa is just this way of planting in which you're integrating different species in order to support each other. So mm-hmm. you will be fixing your nitrogen using beans, which is going to feed the corn. And then you're going to have some aromatic plants and some flowers like cempasúchil to try and fight back the insects and plagues. And then you have the zucchinis and the chilies in there.
But all growing together as opposed to rotating these crops.
Yes, and all of them making sense in order to support each other. You'll have some agaves to border the area so goats and cows wouldn't be able to walk in. Again, like it's just this symbiotic relationship amongst all of the things that are being planted and consumed.
Oh, that's really interesting. So there were some instances of this where you saw it and you thought, oh, that's not achieving what it should be achieving?
No, I get weird when I hear too much of something and I don't see too many living examples.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when a buzzword becomes a buzzword and I just cannot find the golden standards in plain view. So I don't know about you, Lou, but I don't think I still to this day have gone to a milpa in its full capacity and splendor, what I can say, yes, if all of Mexico were to, well, again, that's not how the milpa works because each milpa behaves differently in each ecosystem.
Right.
But if this principle or of this approach was to be taken and modified according to different ecosystems, this will be my golden standard. I still haven't seen that milpa.
Huh. Well, that's interesting. You know, it's funny because for all the talking that I've certainly done about milpa, I think I've only really seen one that I at least recognized as a milpa, right? So like when I go to Lalo's place and I see in his fields, you've got the squash, you got the corn, you got the beans, you got the chiles, all literally growing together. Like, that's the only time that I can remember really seeing that. But, you know, I've certainly done those, what they call, like, the back of house tours of Xochimilco, right?
But those are chinampas. Well, and which can also be managed as a milpa. Yeah.
It can be, right. But that's sort of my point is it looks to me like instead you've got over here's the corn and then over here's the chiles and over here's the beans. It doesn't feel as symbiotic as what you're describing.
Yeah, so all I'm saying is I really think our expertise fails us in this one because I think we've used most of our time visiting the golden standards of agave spirits and finding examples in the in how to plant agave. I think that the closest, nobody will call this a milpa. Nobody in their sane mind will call this a milpa. But I think the closest that I've been to an extremely healthy ecosystem where everything made sense has been Sergio's Ranch in Durango.
Well, you know, it's funny you would say that because it's exactly where my head was going, which is I think the concept of milpa sort of reflects the concept of wild in a lot of ways.
Well, no. But there's and that's why, okay, I take back what I just said, actually. I'm sorry.
Because I agreed with you?
No, yes. No, because I think milpa, there has to be humans in there. Otherwise, that's not a milpa. Like, there has to be humans planting and harvesting and consuming, and it has to support a group of humans. Otherwise, that's not agriculture. It's just wilderness.
Yeah, but, you know, I feel like wilderness happens for a reason. Right? It continues.
I'm gonna quote you the rest of my life with that.
Wilderness happens for a reason. You know, I think for a piece of land and the plants on that piece of land to thrive and work together, they've sort of created their own milpa, just, you know, like things that a bird flew over, dropped a seed, it didn't thrive there, it's not there anymore. There's something about that sense of the wild parts of Mexico that I've seen that remind me of the milpa, because it's all these things interacting with one another without human intervention.
Yeah, but I want the human in there. Otherwise, it's not agriculture. You know, like, I think that the radical element of the milpa is that it includes the human in a non-destructive way. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges of our generations, right? How do we, as humans, come into an ecosystem, take what we need out of it without destroying the hell out of it? So I think that is the radical proposition of the milpa, and of which I would like to have more insights. Ultimately, the episode was about what is, which are the terms that are emerging in agriculture, and what will be the better agriculture to follow, or like, I don't even know what.
I think honestly, God, I think you kind of hit on it in talking about the milpa and human beings interacting with it. Like, the word milpa does not speak to anyone who doesn't know the word, right? So it's an awkward word, but the way you're describing it sounds to me like it is climate smart agriculture, in essence, the way that I understand climate smart agriculture to be.
So, do you know how much I love Connie, your beautiful wife? No, I do.
No, please, on a scale of 1 to 10.
11. So when I last visited you in Chicago, she had this beautiful book called LOTEC, Designed by Radical Indigenism, by this woman called Julia Watson. And she actually maps milpa in a way that I had never seen before. The diagram she puts in, she's an architect, and she is convinced that the future of architecture and design comes from radical indigenism, from solutions that have been with us for thousands of years and that are extremely collaborative with nature. And yeah, like, the way she describes the milpa, the way she maps it, the way she even integrates the burning. So they use fire to burn it every once in a while to re-nourish the soil and just let it rest for a little bit. It's one of the best things I've ever seen. So if anybody gets curious about this, also a lot of the other examples that are in her book, I think, are wonderful. I will push to get an interview with her, Lou. So we'll see. Maybe we do get a quote from her in the future episode.
Sure. Hey, if Dan Saladino will talk to us, anyone will talk to us.
Right? That's what I'm saying. Bueno, joven Lou, that's not a conclusion, but we're ending this because it's getting too long.
Okay. Thanks, Jav. I'll catch you next episode.
Jovenos, adios.
This has been Agave Road Trip, the podcast that helps gringo bartenders learn about agave spirits. Your hosts are Lou Bank and Chava Periban. Sound engineering by Roy Sierra. Theme song performed by Gabriel Oliveira and Mark Rico. Sign up to become a road tripper and listen to more episodes at agaveroadtrip.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know. And if you hated it, recommend it to your enemies. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. Lou is in charge of our social media, so if he happens to sound like an old man, forgive him. He is one. Agave Road Trip is a production of 10 Angry Pit Bulls, Inc.
Agave Road Trip is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network.
Heritage Radio Network is food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. To subscribe to the Heritage Radio Network newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with Heritage Radio Network on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find Heritage Radio Network at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. Heritage Radio Network couldn't do that without support from listeners like you. Become a part of the food world's most innovative community today. Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the Heritage Radio Network family by becoming a member. To become a member of the Heritage Radio Network, click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Heritage Radio Network can become addictive. Programming you hear on Heritage Radio Network can drive you to eat, drink, and listen to more programming on Heritage Radio Network. If it drives you to drink, please do not drink and drive. Drink responsibly, eat responsibly too, and listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly. To listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly, wear protective earbuds. While wearing protective earbuds, do not drive or walk. Sit in a comfortable chair. If that comfortable chair has a hard seat, please remember to get up and stretch every 30 minutes. If you get up and stretch every 30 minutes, do not stretch beyond your abilities. Stay within your defined stretching capacity and consult a doctor who specializes in stretching. If you do not have a doctor, listen to all the shows on the Heritage Radio Network. There has to be at least one doctor among the Heritage Radio Network podcast hosts. Thanks for listening. Agave Road Trip out.